Hello, my name is Mark Anderson. I'm the developer of Floristware. I'd like to start by thanking everyone for their support over the last year. It's been a tough stretch for everyone, and we're truly grateful for your loyalty, and we're excited to be working with you in 2011. One of the things we want to do is offer more of this kind of content. The plan is to present two webinars a month, each one focusing on a particular topic. We know that you don't have much time, so we'll be keeping them very tight and specific so you can choose the ones that interest you. This first session is really important to me because I'm a big fan of the presenter and what he can do for your sales. The presenter is Tim Huckabee of Floral Strategies. I first met Tim several years ago. I had been hearing the name and the claims, and to be honest, I was a little bit suspicious. I started checking him out. I called the shops he'd worked with and heard only great things. Eventually, I was able to sit on one of his training sessions, and right away, it just made sense. His system worked, and it worked better than anything I had ever seen before. Every shop owner I talk to wants to improve their sales, and there's lots of different things they can try. Usually the first thing we think about is advertising, buying an ad in the Yellow Pages or, you know, local newspaper or maybe some radio spots. And those are all great things, but the common thread, the part that worries me, is it always involves spending a bunch of money now in the hope that it's going to pay off somewhere down the road. What I love about Floral Strategies is that you can start using what Tim is going to teach you immediately. Pay attention to what he says, put it into practice right away. And I'm talking about the very next time the phone rings, and I think he can be more profitable right away. I'm hoping you'll get $5, $10, even $20 extra on each order. And I say that because I've seen it happens. So please listen carefully and make a commitment to put what he practices or what he says into practice right away. And now I'd like to introduce Tim.
Thank you, Mark. That was quite a build-up. People are going to think we're related. But I welcome the opportunity to have this captive audience and to share with all of you a little bit of my process and to give you some guidance and some insight and hopefully some help to build some momentum going into Valentine's Day. I do want to throw out, I'm just getting over a cold, so if I'm coughing or sound a little snuffy, just bear with me. It's more about the message than the actual presenter or how it's presented, I like to think. So just to give you another version of my history, I've been in the flower business since Friday morning, 9 o'clock, April 23rd, 1993. I've got a pretty good memory. I just guess it comes with being a Virgo. What I did was I took a job answering the phones in a flower shop in New York. I saw an ad in the paper for a part-time job, and I thought, gosh, anyone could do that. As it turned out, it was difficult. It was challenging, but it was fun. I had a great time. As you can imagine, New York City, the customers were and are extremely difficult. And I worked there for 5 years, and I basically did everything from help people who called to place an order, people like customer service issues, customers who came in to buy flowers. I essentially did every aspect of the business except designing. If I try to design now, it just ends up being embarrassing for all of us. So I don't design. But the customer service, the sales part, I did well. Since this was going back to the early 90s, we weren't using technology at that point. I don't think Floristware was even a thought at that point, unfortunately. But what I was doing was talking to florists every single day, because when we got orders for other parts of the country, I was calling them out. So I was talking to florists, sometimes in the same shop, one or two times a day, but I was talking to many of them on a regular basis. And after a while, what I noticed was I was repeatedly being asked, how do you get such big orders? And to a degree, they kind of expected that coming from New York, where everything is more expensive, but it wasn't just the size of the orders. It was the way the orders were taken. For example, it was very common for us to send out an order that would simply require a vase filled of pink flowers or a vase filled of white flowers for $200 or $300 or $400. I mean, that's any florist's dream order to fill, and we did that all the time. What I realized was that what we were doing there was something special in the way that we were handling customers, both on the front end for sales and on the back end for customer service. So after hearing this more and more and doing a little bit of research, I came to the realization that back then, and still even now, there's absolutely no structured educational process in the floral industry for sales and customer service. that became the impetus for me to fill that need. And I left the flower shop in 97, and I started my own business, Floral Strategies. And that is how I have supported myself since then. I've visited about 45 or 46 states. I've worked my way pretty much across Canada. I've worked in the UK and Ireland, basically the English-speaking world. And consistently, when I train at a store, whether they are big store, small store, new store, old store, sounding very Dr. Seuss-ish, they see their average sale go up anywhere by 15 to 20%. And you've got that capability as well. So I think that sometimes flower shops anticipate Valentine's Day as just kind of a feeding frenzy, and that customers are going to come in and plop down their money anyway, and that's the end of the story. To a degree, it is, but at the same time, you can manage even Valentine's Day better, because what I want you to be able to do is to make a stronger impression on a customer. I want you to be able to help them to buy more easily at your store and to have a stronger impression so that they're going to want to come back. They're going to want to shop again. Unfortunately, what I know from having spent Valentine's Days at different flower shops around the world is that many of these customers, we only see them once a year. That really shouldn't be the case, because if you're going to spend the money on that one day, why not spend it during the rest of the year? But before I get into my ideas about Valentine's Day specifically, what I want to touch on are just a couple of the core elements that I present as part of my training process. And a lot of this is just getting into your heads and making you start think differently about what you do every single day on autopilot. So sit back, relax, and just go with me, and I'm going to show you some of the tools that I use when I come to someone's shop. So why don't we bring up the cartoon, Mark? And everyone can get a look at this. This is a personal favorite. Sorry again. I actually found this cartoon in New Yorker magazine back in September of 2009. And when I was thumbing through the magazine and I saw it, I read it, I laughed. And then I went back and I thought, no, this is more than a funny cartoon. This really speaks volumes. This is literally what we deal with every day. So here is my take on it. Aside from the funny caption, take a look at this guy's posture and his positioning. What he did was came into this flower shop, literally tore through all of these flowers to get right to the counter. And you see the way that he's standing there. He's hunched over. He's physically intimidated by the process of ordering flowers. So he's standing there, resting his hand on his wallet, ready to spend whatever he can tell him to spend. And I think everybody agrees with me up to this point. What I want to stress to you, what I want you to realize, is that this is 90% of the customers that you deal with every day. Whether that customer is in the guise of a middle-aged desperate man like this guy, or the proverbial dear old grandma, or a teenager who just, you know, got his first kiss and wants to buy flowers for his girlfriend. They're all in the same boat in the sense that they don't know anything about flowers. They are all intimidated by the process. They want to be guided. They want to be told what to do. Unfortunately, we don't realize that, or if we don't realize it, we don't capitalize on it. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later on. But when you see this guy standing here, if you think about it, if she were to say to him, oh, I have some agapanthus, he's probably going to look at her and say, well, how long are you going to be contagious? He doesn't know what that is. What the customer knows and understands is color. So we'll talk about that as well. It's much easier to sell colors than specific flower names. And clearly I spent too much time with this cartoon, but I also thought, you know, for all we know, she could be the bookkeeper. She could be on her way back to her desk from going to have a cigarette. And it just so happened to be that when he walked into the store, hers was the first face that he saw. So automatically, by default, she becomes the expert to him. meaning he doesn't know if she's a florist or she's the bookkeeper. He assumes she's a florist, but he doesn't know if she's worked there for 2 weeks or 20 years. Doesn't matter. Just by virtue of her being on the other side of that counter, or had he called, just by virtue of her picking up that phone, she's instantly the expert. So it's just another way where I want to show you that you've got this incredible power over the customers. They're going to absolutely, totally go with whatever you suggest to them. In the majority of the case, I would say probably my personal experience, because I take several hundred orders a month, is that 95% of the customers will listen to me make a suggestion. So hold this thought in mind, and we're going to move on. The next slide that Mark is going to bring up is going to talk about, or show you rather, forbidden questions. Basically, in the flower industry, when a customer calls and a customer comes in, bearing in mind what we just talked about in that cartoon, we still, unfortunately, bombard them with questions. So rather than make it easier for them to shop with us, to the contrary, we ask them all these questions that just make them feel smaller and smaller and smaller and more and more and more intimidated. So what I'm going to teach you is that these are four miserable questions that you need to banish from your vocabulary. I'm going to tell you why, because you'll probably lose your balance when you see some of those. And I'll tell you what the alternatives to asking these questions are, which will actually save you time, streamline the entire sales process, and make customers feel more comfortable. And when a customer is comfortable, a customer spends more money. And that usually cycles around to that customer coming back and shopping more frequently. So it really is a win-win. Now, the four that I'm going to give you today aren't necessarily presented in any order of importance. They're all equally egregious and heinous and wasteful and miserable. So let's have at them, and I'll show you the first one. First one is the proverbial, how much do you want to spend? Funny thing is, when I'm on site at a flower shop and I hand this worksheet out to the staff, it's blank, and I tell them we're going to write these in together, when after my whole prelude and I ask, well, what do you think one of these horrible questions is? Top of mind for everyone is, well, how much you want to spend? Which is kind of funny. Everyone knows it, yet we're all guilty of it. Here's the thing. As soon as you ask a customer, how much do you want to spend, you are artificially limiting what they're going to spend. So you literally just put a cap on what they're going to spend at your store. Secondly, it's just ridiculous and it's unprofessional. Because name one other business that does that. And for the life of me, I can't. Except another flower shop. And I'll give you an example. When was the last time you walked into a jewelry store and they said, how much you want to spend? When was the last time you walked into a pizza joint and they asked you how much you want to spend? It doesn't happen. They're going to find out what your needs are. They're going to make a recommended suggestion and then ultimately let you make your decision based on knowledge. That's what we need to do with your customers. There's one other element of this question, this how much you want to spend, that I think is horrible. And that is, customer, let's say he's driving past your store, and he just got a call from his daughter that she's pregnant. So this is going to be her first child, by default his first grandchild, and he's elated. He's already picking out names and envisioning playing ball in the park with the grandchild. So he comes into the flower shop, and he said, I just found out I'm going to be a grandfather. I want to order some flowers. So what do? We greet him. We're probably friendly, but we essentially start off by saying, well, okay, how much do you want to spend? Now suddenly he's got to take like a 180-degree turn because he wasn't thinking about money. He was thinking about pleasing his daughter. He was thinking about sending a gift. But now you've painted it into a corner, and you literally made him just pick an arbitrary dollar amount out of thin air. So he says, I don't know, $50, $60, when had you used the approach that we're going to talk about, might have spent even more. So I think you get my point. You can't ask this question. Instead of asking this question, what you're going to do is make an appropriate suggestion to a customer. Okay. Number two of the forbidden questions, which has to be banished, is what do you want to send? This takes us right back to the mindset of the cartoon. When you ask the customer, what do you want to send? Think about it, because it's happened already today in your store. All that you do is you start a game of verbal ping pong. Customer comes back and says to you, I don't know, what do you have? You take a deep breath and you give him a verbal inventory and you tell him, well, we've got fresh flowers and silk flowers and we've got plants and we've got fruit and gourmet baskets and we've got. You've given this guy little snippets of about 12 different product lines. His blood pressure is literally rising. So after spending the time and energy, he asks you, well, what do you like? And you say, well, our roses look great today. And what does he say? Okay, great. I'll take the roses. So asking somebody what you want to send is crazy. Again, walking to a jewelry store, hi, what do you want to buy? Jewelry, it's why I'm here. No. Instead, what they're going to ask is, are you interested in something for yourself or is it a gift? Oh, you're looking for a watch? Did you want a leather band? Do you want a metal band? They're going to qualify me. So rather than asking somebody what do you want to send, I'm going to say to them, in as many, however you want to phrase it, do you have a gift in mind or would you like a suggestion? Where I'm basically saying to them, when you came into the store, when you called, if you had already decided what you want to send, wonderful. We'll just type up your order. We'll fill it in on the computer. But if you don't know what you want to send, that's fine too, because I can make an appropriate, educated suggestion. Okay, let's look at forbidden question number three. What's the occasion? This is always the one that causes gasps when I present this. And the reason I don't ask what the occasion is because I don't care what the occasion is. Quite honestly, I don't care if you had triplets or bunion surgery. Asking that question doesn't help me to give you better service. And I'm going to give you a classic example of how it's counterproductive. When you are taking an order, pardon me, out of order, and what I mean by that is if you make the fatal, expensive mistake of taking the card message after the product, you're doing your business a disservice, you're doing your customer a disservice. And here's what I mean. Think about how this has happened to you in some capacity or another. Because I remember I made this mistake in the beginning. Gentlemen call in, I want to order some flowers. Great, I can help you. What's the occasion? Oh, it's my wife's birthday. Okay. So I maybe talk to him about a dozen roses. And I just suggest a beautiful arrangement filled with garden flowers in his wife's favorite color, maybe $75. So he says, oh, that sounds good. Then I go on to take some delivery details. And then I asked him the card message. And his card message has said something to the effect of, dear Carly, happy 50th birthday. Can't wait for a weekend in Paris. All my love, Eric. And then I'm thinking to myself, darn it, this guy, I would have said a lot more than darn it, but this guy was just sold a $75 arrangement, but he just gave me at least $150 card message. And it's very awkward to then double back and say to him, oh, now that I know that you really, you've got deep pockets, this is what you should be spending. It's virtually impossible to do that. However, had I used the program written or used a program configured in a way that would allow me to gather delivery information, then card information, when I got into product information, I'm not selling blind. I'm selling from a standpoint of education. So I could even factor that into my suggestion to him along the lines of saying, oh, wow, 50th birthday, that's a milestone. What about 50 roses? Or factor in that it is a milestone birthday, that he's taking her on this expensive vacation. Give the guy the opportunity to spend more. The worst thing that he could have said to my offer of a $200 arrangement was no. But if he was never given that opportunity, he's never going to buy it. So moral of the story with number three, clearly you need to know if the flower is going to a funeral or to a baby shower, but asking what's the occasion, total waste of time. And finally, the fourth of the forbidden questions is going to be, do you want your total to include delivery and tax? This is a really, really expensive, nasty habit that a lot of florists have. And, pardon me, over the past few years, as the price of gas has gone up and everybody realized, good grief, we're not charging enough for delivery, and they started charging more, there began to grow an apprehension about even telling that to customers, or even worse, a feeling of guilt on the on behalf of the staff for charging this much. So I'm going to give you two examples of, again, where we as an industry need to learn to listen better. First customer calls and says, hi, I want to send some flowers. I want to spend $70. Okay? What I would hear is that this guy is going to spend $70. We're going to create a beautiful arrangement to that value. We're going to add delivery. We're going to add tax. We're done. Second customer calls and says, hi, I want to send some flowers. I want to spend about $70 total. With that second customer, because he put a qualifier on it, whether it's him saying $70 total, $70 bottom line, $70 is my final cost, then and only then would I say to him, oh, when you say $70 total, do you mean including delivery and tax? And he says, oh, yeah, I've got a prepaid Visa card, so I really need my total to be $70. And that makes sense. However, and I know that everybody listening to this is guilty to some degree at some point, we don't discern between the two, and we ask every customer. So we would have asked that first guy. And that first guy who was content or planned on spending $70+, now when he was given that option, well, do you want your total to include delivery and tax? He says, sure. So now what happens? His wife doesn't get a $70 arrangement. She gets a $53.19 arrangement. So that means the shop is making less money. You're putting fewer flowers in the design. She's getting less of a flavor of what you're capable of creating. So it really is a lose-lose for everybody. So the moral of the story there is only when a customer puts some kind of qualifier on it should you ask them if you want their total to include delivery and tax. And we'll get into more detail on this topic on future webinars, but I want to give you these 4 points because these are going to affect how you're going to handle your volume of sales at Valentine's Day. And the final thing that we want to talk about is roses, because that's what Valentine's Day is primarily about. So traditionally what happens is when a customer calls you year-round, but even more so Valentine's Day, their shopping price. So the first thing they ask when you pick up the phone is, how much are your roses? So you say, they're $79.99 or they're $99.99. And what he says, pardon me, is, okay, I'll call you back. I will call you back is up there with the check is in the mail and all the other great lies of history. He's not going to call you back. He's going to call the next flower shop. He's going to try calling a grocery store until he can get a better price. To a customer, especially Valentine's Day, a rose is just a commodity. So I feel that there's no point in trying to educate this customer who very often is only buying these flowers once a year that you're using florist quality or that you treat them with this kind of chemical. They don't care because to them, the roses that you're selling in your store look awfully similar to the roses that they're going to see in the grocery shop or the big box retailer, or you know, being sold out of a cart on a street corner. So what you need to do with this customer is, it's just like fishing. You've got to reel them in. So when they begin by asking, well, how much are your roses? And what I'm about to present to you is just a template. You are going to have complete autonomy to edit this. You can expand it to 3 or 4 selections. Obviously, these prices are just meant as a reference for this webinar today, but it's the concept that I want you to get your heads around. So when the customer asks me, because I will be working in a retail flower shop for Valentine's Day, well, how much are your roses? I don't give them a price. When you give them a price, you lose. So what what I say to him instead is, well, sir, or ma'am for that matter, we actually have two different rose arrangements. This year we're offering our classic dozen and our premium dozen. I then go on to explain to them what those are. So I will say, for example, with our classic dozen roses, we take 12 long stem roses. We will include whatever your shop offers, baby's breath, greenery, etc. Present those in a vase. It's important to mention the container to the customer. And those are priced at $89. Then with our premium dozen, we take them a step further. We take those same beautiful dozen roses and we include or we add whatever it is you're going to add. If you want to include Peruvian lilies, if you want to include Trachylium or Genestra or Queen Anne's lace, if you want to add two or three types of greenery. My suggestion is to focus the money on the flowers and the greenery as opposed to going to an upgraded vase, because spending $25 to get a quote-unquote keepsake vase is not as easy of a sell as you being able to promise him that visually he's going to get A, B, and C beyond what he would have had. When you offer them this way, you may want to go for a bigger spread. You may want to go with an 89 and, sorry, you may want to go with a $30, $40, or even $50 spread between the two, and obviously give them the content to merit that. But what I can promise you is if you do this, and Valentine's Day is a great way to start doing it, but you should keep this going year-round, you will sell one out of three customers the premium dozen roses. And think about it. Once he sends her the premium, he can never send her the classic again. So you've got him hooked for life. But the numbers, I've been doing this since the 90s, and the numbers hold true no matter where the shop is located that does it this way. One out of three will go for the upgrade. It's simple math. You've got to be consistent about giving them the choice. That's the issue. And we all know what happens. It's very easy to get caught up in the melodrama of Valentine's Day. Oh, it's too busy. The phones were too busy. I could barely talk about one arrangement. You know what? Every Valentine's Day, when I'm on the phone, I sell this way, and I still manage to get email addresses from customers and give them their customer numbers and do all the things that I would do as if it were a summer afternoon in June. So don't sell them short. Final part of this equation is that Valentine's Day is a great opportunity to sell them a balloon. What I like to do is give them a chance to buy a balloon for the simple reason that most flower shops are going to carry balloons at Valentine's Day, so that covers you whether it's being delivered by you or you're sending that to a shop out of town. A balloon doesn't need description. Everybody knows what a balloon is. And $5, $6, it's more or less a North American universal price. The trick, if you will, is the language. So what I do is I say to the customer, once I've sold him the premium dozen or the classic dozen, I then will say to him in almost an off-the-cuff way is, oh yeah, by the way, as a finishing touch, we can attach an I love you, or he might say, maybe he's one of those corny guys that got married on Valentine's Day. So maybe I'll sell him an I love you and a happy anniversary balloon for just $5. And when I say just $5, in proportion to the $109 he just spent on the premium dozen, come on, it's nothing. And he realizes that, and it makes it very easy for him to quickly say, yeah, sure, oh, give me a couple, give me three. And what you've just done is increase the value of the sale. So it's important to be consistent. Be consistent in offering two choices of the roses, be consistent in offering the finishing touch, and it will have a big impact on your Valentine's Day. What it will also do is show you, contrary to what you may be feeling over the crappy economy over the past 2 years, is that there is money in your local economy, and people will spend it if you give them the opportunity to do so. So That is the conclusion of our webinar for Valentine's Day. You'll be able to get in touch with me through Mark if you have any questions. You can dial me directly. Mark is giving you my contact phone number at the office. You can jump onto my website and see a list of all the shops that I've worked with. And what we are offering is if you pardon me, if you stay in touch by liking Floristware on Facebook or starting to follow Floristware on Twitter, we will send you the Word document of that chart with the two different rose variations and the language for selling balloons. So you can customize that for your own shop, get it posted, so by the middle of January, your staff will have it memorized. So that is going to be me signing out and wishing you the best of luck for Valentine's Day 2011.
Tim, thank you very, very much for doing this. I appreciate it very much. I've seen you do it a few times now, and I learn something new every time, and I really think that's going to help our users, and I hope we can do this again sometime. To the users,
great.
Thanks, Tim. And to the users, thanks for taking the time to participate. We're going to make a recording of this. We'll make it available to you on the website. We want to make sure that everybody in your shop gets a chance to see it, and we'll include some related material that show how Tim's suggestions are incorporated into Floristware to help make sure that you stay true to his path. Okay, so thank you again, everyone. Have a great 2011. We look forward to speaking with you soon. Bye for now.